live. Quas? Quas?
Yeah, we're live now. I don't know what happened to them, but they apparently had the same problem as last week. But we are live now. We have the intro on here, so let's play the intro and then we'll get to the.
Okay.
All right. Yeah. I don't know what they did.
What about that, guys?
What?
Let's play the intro.
All right, here we go.
You have tuned in to the Sports Docket with Ace Man and the Cross, the best sports radio show on Blog Talk Radio.
Baseball is certainly in the air. We got Adam Rubin from the Daily News talk some Mets. We got Tom Borstein talk some Yankees. And we got a few Blue Shirt bloggers talk about the Red Hot Rangers. Coming up next on the docket. Check it out.
You ready? The Sports Docket with Ace Man and the Quad. Yeah. For those of you that want to know what we're all about, like this, y'all. Come on. 10% luck, 20% skill, 15% concentrated power of will, 5% pleasure, 50% pain, and 100% reason to remember the name.
And welcome to the Sports Docket here on Blog Talk Radio, episode 33 with Ace Men and the Quad for February the 28th, 2008, a Thursday night here in New York and Lindbrook. And once again, this is the Sports Docket. I'm Ethan Klossman.
And I'm Steve Ackerman. Of course, as usual, a lot on the table for you guys tonight. Should be a fun show. We got a lot of guests coming up. We got Adam Rubin from the Daily News. He's going to talk some Mets baseball with us, talk about, how the offseason's going. We got a few Ranger guys later. We got Doug Fisher from the Blue Shirt Bulletin blog, and also Doobie from, Doug Fisher is actually, Blue Shirt's on Broadway, and Doobie is from Blue Shirt Bulletin.
Yeah.
And we will talk some Yankees as well.
Tom Borstein of SNY.TV.
He does the Bronx Cheer blog on SNY.TV. It's a Mets station, but they also do mention the Yankees on that station.
Well, yeah, they give them some coverage. So
we will be giving Ranger updates throughout the game, and I have one right now for you. Actually, Chris Drury has just scored for the Rangers.
There we go.
They're up 3-0 in Carolina right now. They're red hot, maybe one of the hottest teams in the NHL right now.
The Rangers right now looking for their third straight win. They have rebounded very nicely from their collapse against Montreal. They're getting contribution tonight from the guys that have been contributing basically every night now, Jabinski and Avery, and now Chris Drury coming through.
Well, yeah, we will be, not right now, but we will be doing some Rangers, some Islanders, some Devils later in the show. We will recap the trades that happened during the trade deadline, so that'll be a little bit later. Just remind you guys, before we get started here, of course, the number to call, we accept your calls, anytime during the show, as long as you don't have a guest on. Our number is 1-646-478-5118. You can call in at any time, or if you don't want to go in the air, you want to have a question anyway, email me, MetsFanatic910@AOL.com, or email the Quas at either Quaster06@AOL.com or QuasMets08.
If
you have any question at all about the Mets, the Yankees, spring training, about hockey, anything you want, whether it's whatever it is, just ask us.
We do have Tom Borstein of the Bronx Cheer blog joining us at 8:10. So if you want to get a call in before that, we'll be happy to take it. Of course, the Yankees, surprisingly, still have not started their spring training games yet. The Yankees' first game is going to be on March 1st against the Phillies. And then Andy Pettit will make his first start on the Sunday, March 2nd.
All the guys right now making their first starts. The Yankees, the Mets.
Santana's going tomorrow.
Santana's starting tomorrow in Port St. Lucie.
Yep.
So that should be, a fairly exciting game for spring training for Mets fans.
Mm-hmm.
Also, for the Mets, Pedro Martinez will start March 6th.
Yeah, Pedro Martinez is going to skip the first go-around for the rotation, but Pedro's actually going to be starting after Santana in the rotation, which is good news because that means that it could very well be possible that Santana will start on March 31st against the Florida Marlins, and then Pedro will make the next start. So it seems that Willie Randolph is set to have Pedro and Santana start consecutive games, which would be huge for the Mets.
I mean, yeah, I mean, the age will be a factor, though, as the season goes along. I mean, especially with Pedro and El Duque, I mean, you got to have to worry about that. That's what happened to the Mets last year. The bullpen faded down the stretch. Their starters, they had too many innings. So that's got to be one concern. And that's what Rob from Lindbrook points out. He says the Mets aging will kind of be, he thinks it'll be a factor, and he doesn't think the Mets are going to do as good this season. So, I mean, we'll see how everything goes. So.
Yeah, I mean, definitely we'll see. Of course, speaking of aging starting rotation, you're looking over across Florence and Tampa, to the Yankees, with Andy Pettitte and Mussina footing that rotation in Qingming Wang, and then you have the youngsters, with Ian Kennedy and Philip Hughes. So
yeah, I mean, Philip Hughes is, I mean, I think he's going to be pretty good this year. And once again, somebody from Lindbrook refers to him as Master Hughes. And he thinks Jarvis Chamberlain would be great as well. I mean, obviously the Yankees, you have to admit, as a Mets fan, as any fan of the other 29 teams, that the Yankees do have a lot of talent in their pitching staff, but the thing is that they are young. And you don't quite know until they go through a full season, and especially in the big league level. I mean, I think Jarvis Chamberlain, you could basically expect him to have a good year. But with Ian Kennedy, with Phil Hughes, with some of their other young guys, I mean, I think that you don't quite know what you're going to get until the season starts, until you're a good portion through the season.
And the we'll get into this with Tom Morrison, but the Yankees, enough when, you know, they have their starters, but it's not enough to have a lot of questions with their bullpen. I mean, they have guys in their pen that Mets fans will be familiar with. I'm sure Mets fans remember Scott Strickland. He's up for a job in the bullpen for the Yankees. You got guys like Darryl Rasner and Jeff Carson. I mean, there's so many question marks in Yankees bullpen. I mean, Jarvis Chamberlain and Mariano Rivera are pretty much the only locks.
Well, I mean, they did. Farnsworth. I mean, you kind of doubt what you get from him, but
Troy Hawkins also.
They
there
did add the Troy Hawkins in the offseason.
Brian Bruni is a possibility of making.
I mean,
it.
Yeah, they have a few good guys in the bullpen there, but I think they're overall it's pretty questionable.
I mean, they're not to say the Mets don't have a bullpen question marks as well. I mean, the Mets also have plenty of question marks going into their bullpen. And,
yeah,
and
the Mets bullpen right now, you don't quite know. I mean, the Mets right now, you know Wagner's going to be a closer. You would hope that Duane or Sanchez can come back and be the setup man. And you would hope that that Heilman can be solid. I mean, there's a lot of guys right now for the Mets in their bullpen. Also, one guy that to watch for this year by a guy named Eddie Kunz, the 6'5" right-handed pitcher, the relief pitcher. Supposed to have some gas and maybe come up by the end of this year, so watch out for him. Yeah. They say he could be the Mets' Jarvis Chamberlain.
Yeah, they're just comparing him to Jarvis, no question. We're going to take a quick break now, and then we're going to be joined by Tom Borstein of SNY.TV from the Bronx Cheer Blog. We'll be right back after this.
Sports Docket is your source for spring training coverage.
We've got beat reporters from the Mets and Yankees with us until the beginning of the 2008 season.
Keep your radio dial locked in to the Sports Docket with Ace Man and the Quas. Now back to the Sports Docket with Ace Man of the Quas. I don't know.
And we are back here on the Sports Docket, Ace Man of the Quas, 8:10 on a Thursday night in New York City and Lindbrook. And at any moment now, Tom Borstein of SNY.TV will join us. We'll be getting into the Andy Pettitte press conference with him.
I mean, yeah, definitely. The Yankees have a lot of issues in the offseason right now with steroids. They just have to be happy that they don't have Roger Clemens on the team anymore.
Yeah, and Roger
Clemens would be an absolute huge distraction for them. But right now, you know, you have to admire Pettit here. You know, he told the truth the whole time. I believe that while Clemens is trying to, you know, back out of the truth and try to, you know, get away with it and kind of fade into the distance as he retires.
We'll also be getting into the Joe Girardi, first year's manager.
We will have the Yankee guy on too, but let's just update the other hockey scores from around the league.
Okay.
Right now, a few scores in the Eastern Conference that matter to the locals. Boston over Pittsburgh right now, 3-0 in the second period. Zdeno Chara with a goal, and Sturm with two goals for Boston, so they are red hot right now as well.
We do have... 717 area code. I believe this is.
Okay,
Tom,
we'll get to the hockey scores after. I believe this is
Tom Borstein right now of SNY.TV. Is this Tom?
Yeah, it is. How's it going?
Hey, great. Thanks so much.
Hey, thanks for joining us, Tom.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
All right. First off, tell us a little bit about how it's, you know, what's the reaction that you get, you know, being Yankees blogger for SNY.TV, which is practically Met Central, like. What's the kind of reaction and feedback you get from Yankee fans and the blogs?
Well, I mean, the site tries to cover, obviously, all of the New York teams, but it is, you know, there is going to be more traffic geared towards the Mets. But I get some feedback, and, you know, I mean, with any Mets-Yankees thing, you're going to have complexes on both sides. I know a lot of Mets fans have a kind of like a younger brother complex towards Yankees fans, and there are plenty of Yankees people who, you know, find it like they have to make sure that the Mets are down for them to feel good about themselves. But I don't really... I mean, as much as, like, everyone makes a big deal out of, like, the Subway Series in the middle of the regular season and such, I mean, I don't get the sense that two teams care that much about each other. It's definitely great for the city when the fans go at it, but...
Yeah, definitely.
Bottom line, unless they play in the World Series, it's not... The players don't really get up too much about it, you know, throughout the season like the fans do.
All right, now, the Yankees, one of the issues in the offseason has been the issue surrounding Andy Pettit and Roger Clemens with steroids. So what is your whole viewpoint on all this steroid issues in Major League Baseball, especially with Clemens and Pettit?
Well, I mean, I'm not going to be on long enough to, you know, fully document my talent of it. But Clemens I have pretty much no sympathy for. I mean, I know he's never failed a drug test and he's never been, you know, proven to have taken drugs. But, I mean, it's more than circumstantial evidence with Brian McNamee, his trainer, saying he injected it, and then Chuck Knobloch. And Andy Pettit is, you know, former teammates and former, I guess, Pettit at least a training partner, saying that McNamee told the truth. So it seems strange to me that McNamee would lie about Clemens and then tell the truth about Pettit and Knobloch. So I have no sympathy for Clemens. And I think I have less sympathy for Pettit than most people seem to be giving him because at the bottom line, yes, like there's a difference between HGH and steroids. And there's a difference between, you know, using it two or three times and being a, you know, a regular user like Clemens appears to be. But at the same time, he did take a prescription drug without a prescription. That's been banned for baseball for about 20 years now. And he cheated. Like it or not, I know he owned up to it, but he only owned up to it after it came out that he did it. It's not like he held a news conference without being named in the Mitchell Report and said, you know, all these other guys have been named, and I just want to clear my conscience. So, I mean, he's going to get a better reaction from the fans than, say, Clemens would or some of these other players like Barry Bonds and such. But at the end of the day, he took an illegal drug. I took a drug illegally. It's not an illegal drug. Took a drug illegally, and he doesn't deserve a free pass like a lot of people are giving him.
Yep, definitely.
Yeah, and I really see, you know, Andy Pettit this season in a lose-lose situation. Because let's say he goes out there by the All-Star break and he's 8-0 with an ERA below 3, or if he's 4-6 with ERA above 5. I mean, the Yankee fans are either going to think he's back on something, or that he's washed up. So what are your thoughts about how Andy Pettit, going throughout the season, is just going to be question marks around him and whether he's being successful or not?
I'm not sure there's that big a question mark about whether he's still doing drugs. I tend to believe him that he's not on anything right now. And I think the Yankees, if they could get anything close to what they got out of him last year, where he finished, you know, with an ERA right around 4, gave him a lot of quality innings, except for one poor stretch in July, I think it was, when he got bombed in a couple starts in a row. He was really quite good. So if they can, last year he was 15-9 with a 4.05 ERA. So if he can see something like that, again, I think they have to take it. He's going to be the number two starter behind Wong. But I don't think he's been using anything, and I don't expect him to have a severe drop off. I think,
you know,
I think he'll probably end up with an ERA in the, you know, mid fours, and that's good enough.
Yeah. I think with Andy Pettit, I think he told the truth about his HGH and possible steroid use. I think he told the truth the whole time. Now, Joe Girardi was hired as the manager of this team after Joe Torre decided to go to the Los Angeles Dodgers. So how do you think that's going to affect this team going into 2008 without Joe Torre there and with a brand-new young manager?
I think some of the veterans may miss Torre, but I think Torre kind of run his course with this team. He played his favorites. He got a lot of credit for managing a bullpen well, but at the end of his career, he didn't really manage the bullpen well, mostly because he didn't have the horses out there. I mean, it's easy to manage a bullpen well when you have Mariano Rivera as a setup man, as he did in '96, the likes of Jeff Nelson and Mike Stanton when they were really good in the late '90s, or even Tom Gordon in 2004 was one of the best pitchers in baseball. But when you'd have to start trucking out Scott Proctor and Kyle Farnsworth, it's a whole different story, and he just wasn't that good at it without the horses in his bullpen. And as far as Girardi, I'm a little concerned about him because of the. I mean, I know it's not fair to blame it entirely on him, or even say it's at all his fault. It could just be bad luck. But the young pitchers he worked with in Florida, Anibal Sanchez comes to mind. Obviously, you know, Josh Johnson, etc. Who are all those?
Yeah, you know,
all those pitchers who had injuries. He has to be very careful because the Yankees have better prospects than those guys were, and Joe Girardi can't take a win at all costs this year and run them into the ground.
You know, yeah, I think Joe Girardi, I think he did a great job in Florida. And obviously, I believe he only got fired because of his relationship with Loria, the owner. Now, while Joe Torre was here, while you were watching this Yankee team, do you have the feeling that sometimes he overworked the bullpen at times? You know, it seems like a lot of times, you know, he gave Mariano two innings, he gave several guys two innings, you know, only the guys that he trusted.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. I mean, down the stretch, obviously he had his whipping boys. Tom Gordon in 2004 comes to mind. But if Tom Gordon wasn't used that much in 2004, the Yankees probably wouldn't have won the division. So it's, you know, such a good situation. But he obviously, there are definitely times last year where he pulled starters way too early in the game, I thought. And there are not any stays with pitchers too long. He has curious obsessions with pitchers. Mike Myers was on the team to get lefties out, and he kept. But he had worse numbers against lefties than righties. And I never understood why he was in the game as, you know, a left situational lefty guy to get out left-handed hitters when he was terrible at it. And that's something that Torre just, like, didn't open his eyes and see. By and large, though, I think he did a great job with the team. It's just the last couple of years, the expectations got not out of control, but, you know, were the same thing, and you can't win the World Series every year. And he didn't have the best pitchers in the bullpen to work with, so I think that came back to bite him.
Now, like every spring training, there's always a fight for position players, and really that's the only reason why anyone would really care about spring training games. And, of course, the Yankees have quite a few players competing for the bullpen. I mean, you got guys like Scott Strickland, Jeff Carson, Darryl Rasner, and then you have the definite players like LaTroy Hawkins, of course, Chamberlain, Brian Bruni, setting up for Rivera. What are your thoughts about this Yankee bullpen? Is it really going to be a fight, or do you think it's going to be won pretty early in camp?
I think it's going to be a fight. I think it's going to be. I wrote about this actually yesterday on SNY.TV, and I said that I think the only three people who have guaranteed spots in the bullpen, and four if you include Chamberlain, the three are Rivera, obviously, Farnsworth, because he's going to be making $5 million, and LaTroy Hawkins, because they went out and got him to replace Luis Fiscaino. As far as Brian Bruni goes, he really fell out of favor with this organization last year, got sent down to the minors, and he walked almost as many guys as he struck out last year. I think his strikeout-to-walk ratio was 39-37, and that's just not going to get it done in the bullpen. So he needs to have a good spring. They have a lot of intriguing guys out there. Eduardo Ramirez is a guy who has a lethal changeup, but seems, you know, pretty predictable. Chris Britton is a guy who, I mean, I'm not saying he's going to be like the second coming, but I think he could be a capable arm in the bullpen. Joe Torre never really gave him a chance. You have Carsons and Rasner, I think, are fighting it out for one spot. There's very little chance both of them make the team. Ross Olin Carson, intriguing guy. I think he'll end up starting the season in AAA, but he's got a heavy sinker and impressed last year. And then you got Jose Varas, who strikes out a lot of guys and could be useful. And then you have some of the non-roster guys there. Who?
I mean, yeah, I think the Yankee bullpen. I'm sorry.
I'm just saying, Billy Trayman, Scott Strickland are two non-roster guys who can make the
team. I think the Yankee bullpen will be fine. I think they'll do a good job. Now we have my friend Rob from Lumbrick here. He wants to ask a few questions. So he asked one. How is Giambi doing in camp, and will he be as good as he was a few years ago? And also, you want to ask how a minor league prospect, Alberto Gonzalez, is developing.
Well, I haven't been in camp, so I wouldn't know how Alberto Gonzalez is doing. From all reports, Giambi is slimmed down, and what's good about that is that they really want him to play first base in the field, because the Yankees' first base last year was an embarrassment. They had people like Miguel Cairo playing first base for extended periods of time, and he's just not a first baseman in the Major League. He doesn't field the position any better than your average guy. He's obviously a well-below-average hitter. So you get Giambi there with his above-average offense. If he can play tolerable defense, I think that's important for him. And he's going to put up an on-base percentage of about 360 or 370 at the minimum. And that's really all you can ask for at this point from his career. And, I mean, it's his walk year, and everyone's motivated in their walk year. So we'll see what happens.
That's true. Definitely true.
Now, getting towards A-Rod here, and, of course, we've seen that in past years, Torrey really hasn't confronted A-Rod when he's in those slumps, you know, those slumps after the seventh inning, where he's not coming through with runners in scoring position. Now, Girardi seems like a more of a fiery manager. Do you think Girardi is going to get in A-Rod's face, so to speak, when A-Rod is having those kind of slumps?
I don't know. I think Girardi's going to know a left back. I mean, it's not like A-Rod didn't have any slump last year. The guy had one of the best seasons ever for a right-handed hitter in Yankee Stadium, if not the best. And I think, I mean, Girardi, everyone just needs to, you know, back off Alex Rodriguez a little bit. The media, he's like a circus. They love him. He sells so many papers. He probably single-handedly increases the GDP of New York by about 5% during baseball season. The number of papers he sells, commercials, you know, the percentage of people he gets to watch Yankee games. But he's obviously a great player. He has a, you know, tendency to put his foot in his mouth a couple times and do a couple of questionable things. But he's really, I mean, I don't understand what the big backlash is against him. I know he makes a lot of money, but he's a great baseball player. And I don't think he's going to have, I mean, he's obviously not going to have the year he had last year, but I think he's going to, you know, put up a year similar to 2005 and probably halfway between 2005 and 2004 when he was just getting used to the Yankees. And I think he'll be fine. I think Girardi will kind of leave it be and not really, you know, go after
yeah.
it.
Okay. Now, the Yankees, of course, have... you know, besides Andy Pettit, they have a very young starting rotation this year with, of course, Ian Kennedy with Philip Hughes and possibly Jabba Chamberlain joining the pitching staff in the second half of the season. How do you think all of those guys are going to fare this year, and how big will their roles be on this team?
They're going to be put into a situation where there's going to be pressure for them to play a big role, but the Yankees have to be careful because you can't ask pitchers who haven't thrown that many innings at a professional level to suddenly increase their innings total by a lot. I mean, Jabber Chamberlain doesn't have that many innings. Phil Hughes only threw about 70 professional innings last year, if I'm not mistaken. And he's going to be asked to throw a lot more this year, and you have to be careful because that's a long-term injury risk when you do that. I'm most optimistic, believe it or not, about Hughes as a starter, then Chamberlain, and then Kennedy. Just because Chamberlain came in and blew people away in the bullpen last year doesn't mean he's a better prospect right now than Phil Hughes. Phil Hughes is more polished with three pitches. He's, you know, he's almost a four-pitch pitcher at this point. I know Chamberlain's going to be that down the road, but right now Hughes is a guy who can help this team more in the rotation. I think Chamberlain should be a starter from day one. The idea of him being in the bullpen is a waste of that talent. And Kennedy I'm optimistic about, but his stuff is just not quite as good as the other two. But I think he can end up being a, you know, a capable number three starter a year or two down the road, or you know, above-average number three starter a year or two down the road.
Okay, great. Once again, Tom Borstein, Bronx Cheer, joining us right now from SNY.TV. Of course, another big position player fighting for some sort of role on this team is Shelly Duncan, whether he's taking ground at first base or taking fly balls in the outfield. What do you think about Shelly Duncan's role on 2008 Yankees?
Well, I mean, I know everyone loves him because, you know, he gets in the face of players. He's doing that crazy elbow slap. And, you know, he had those, you know, that Shane Spencer-like moments last year where he kept hitting home runs. But he's going to be 29 this year in September, so he's 28 already. So really, he's past the point of developing. You know, most major league players, their ability peaks at age 27, so he's already a year past. So I'm not saying he's going to have a huge drop-off, but it's not like you can expect him to get that much better. He posted in a 330 on-base percentage last year. And, I mean, that's average, and that's not that great. Obviously, he has some pop, but I think he's going to end up being, you know, a fourth outfielder type on this team, a fifth outfielder type on this team. If the Yankees carry 12 pitchers, their bench is going to be probably Jose Molina, obviously, is the backup catcher, is locked in. And then you're going to have someone like Shelly Duncan, Wilson Bettman, and maybe Morgan Ensberg as well. So there's really not that much room on the bench. I think Joe Girardi, old habits by heart.
Yeah, it's going to be hard to get used to, I guess, right, with Girardi instead of Torrey.
Yeah.
I mean, Torrey was a great manager here.
Yeah.
We have another question from a listener on the show. Vincent from Lindbrook asks, who do you think the Yankees' top prospect is?
As far as, I mean, you can still classify Ian Kennedy as a pitching prospect. If you want to go below that, I guess.
I mean, I guess we can go below Ian Kennedy and Jabba Chamberlain.
Yeah, I mean, I guess Austin Jackson, the outfielder, is probably their top prospect.
Okay.
Still a year or two away. The Yankees have developed pitching fine, but as far as, you know, their hitting prospects go, it's been a little bit disappointing. Jose Tabata is obviously one that comes to mind, but he's really young and really hard to predict. And, I mean, you just have to be patient with these prospects, and you just have to realize that just because they have a lot of, you know, hype around them doesn't mean that they are they're going to pan out. So, I mean, Austin Jackson seems like, you know, the closest to being like a contributor on the major league team.
Okay, and before I let you go, I would just have one more question. If you put an odds, like, on the Yankees World Series chances, what are your thoughts about the Yankees and going to the World Series this season?
Going to the World Series?
Yeah, going.
I mean, I'd say they have a slightly worse chance than, I mean, I think they're probably, I don't think they're the favorites to win the division for the first time in a long time.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, the Indians are a very good team. I'm not sold completely on the Tigers. I think the Angels are going to make the playoffs, guaranteed. So, I mean, if you, because that division is just not that good. So, I think the Angels actually have the best chance of making the World Series just because they have the best chance of making the playoffs. And, I mean, if you need me to put odds on it, I'd say probably, you know, probably 7 or 8 to 1 that the Yankees make the World Series.
Okay. Well, once again,
all right, well, thank you for your time. Some great stuff. Really, thank you for taking a few minutes out of your busy schedule to join us.
All right, no problem. Thanks anytime.
All right, good luck to Yankees this year.
And once again, check out Tom Borstein's blog over at SNY.TV. That's Bronx Cheer. And coming up at 8:30, about 3 minutes from now, we're going to be having on Adam Rubin to talk Mets base. And again, that was Tom Borstein, the Yankees' first spring training game against the Phillies on Saturday. And then on Sunday, going for the start is going to be Andy Pettit. He will make the start the Yankees on March 2nd. So we're going to take a break, and then Adam Rubin will join us live.
Hello, Mets fans. You're looking for a show that covers the Mets inside and out? Then there's a show for you. The 7 Train to Shane Mets Radio Show on Blog Talk Radio. Join Matt, Greg, Mike, and special guests all season long with inside analysis on games, news, rumors, the minor leagues, and more. Voice your opinion or ask a question by calling into the show. For up to the latest Mets news, rumors, opinions, and show schedules, visit our website at www.7traintoshay.blogspot.com. For Mets fans, by Mets fans, it's the 7 Train to Shay Mets Radio Show. Now back to the sports docket with Ace Man and the Quas.
The Sports Docket live from Limburg is brought to you by
Ace's Hardware Store. Everything you could ever want is at Ace's Hardware Store.
Now, back to the Sports Docket with Ace Man of the Quas, only at www.blogtalkradio.com/docket.
Johan Sam, making 26 start, his second this season against the Texas Rangers.
Oh, and Bird strikes out 4 straight strikeouts for Santana.
4 or more runs for him.
5 straight.
So I think he needs to go back out there.
Number 6.
And of course, you know, the older you get, the better you work.
Wow. 7 strikeouts. 8 strikeouts. 9 strikeouts. Strikeout number 10. Number 11.
Then the stretch position. Strikeout number 12 here. Very, very solid.
Strikeout number 13. 1 and 2 to Marlon Byrd. Number 14. Strikeout number 15. And Santana ties a club record. Number 16.
Move the left,
joining us right now is Adam Rubin of the Daily News for the Mets Report, and also the author of the book, Pedro, Carlos, and Omer. Adam, thanks so much for taking time and busy schedule to join us tonight.
Oh, my pleasure. Unfortunately, the Mets are 0-2, but I'm not sure it really matters.
Good thing that it's only spring training. I think they'll have plenty of time to get ready for the season.
Yeah, and we're joking. Johan Santana is the stopper. He's going tomorrow, so I'm sure they'll stop that 3-game winless streak tomorrow.
Yeah, we certainly hope so. They're returning to Port St. Lucie, I believe, right, their first game at Port St. Lucie this spring training.
Yeah, well, they did play the University of Michigan in the exhibition game on Tuesday when Michelle Abreu had that two-out, two-run home run in the ninth to tie it, but then went to Lakeland with a skeleton career the first day. Mike Pelfrey actually looked good for two innings, but obviously, especially early on in spring training, it's the starting pitchers are only going two innings, so you see a lot of guys you wouldn't normally see. The Mets really brought no one to that game. In fact, Major League Baseball called Omar Minaya today to kind of lodge a complaint about how few guys the Mets brought to that game, but it went nowhere, that complaint. And then the Mets, obviously, today lost to the Cardinals 7-0, only had four hits, but I really wouldn't worry.
No, I wouldn't get concerned right now. You know, you don't even have the starters playing a full game right now.
Of course, with Johan Santana going tomorrow tonight, well, the Mets, of course, going to baby him through first couple of starts, and then eventually he'll, I guess, go five, six, or seven innings, depending on the Willy Rando things. But with Santana going tomorrow and then Pedro going on March 6th, it appears that Willy Rando has it set up that Santana and Pedro will be pitching on back-to-back days. And Willie's not going to say at this point in time, of course, but does it seem likely that it will be Santana starting opening day?
Oh, yeah, it's pretty clear. The Mets are pretty standard in putting their pitchers on a pattern where they pitch every 5 days, and then before that last outing, you give them an extra day of rest. So it's lined up perfectly for Santana to pitch every fifth day, get an extra day of rest before his first regular season start, which would be opening day against the Marlins. John Neese is going to start on Saturday, but that's just holding the spot for Pedro Martinez. He'll start game two of the season, and they have Oliver Perez on track for game three right now. So even though Oliver had a lot of success against the Braves last year, I would project that the first series would be Santana, Pedro, Oliver Perez. You get the lefty-righty-lefty thing going.
Yeah.
Then you go to Atlanta and you get John Main and we think El Duque, but we'll see. He's supposed to now probably pitch in his first Grapefruit League game on Monday. I'm sure Pelfrey will shadow him and they'll keep him on the same track. Now, El Duque's only faced batters once, and he only threw half speed, so I would imagine he's going to throw batting practice once more, or at least a bullpen tomorrow, and again, that game on Monday, but we'll see from El Duque. You know, he never had that bunion fixed. He was told that if he had the bunion fixed, it would be like a two-year rehab from that, wouldn't be able to pitch, and that obviously would end his career, so he didn't do that. He did have surgery on the toe next to the big toe, and it's now actually a little shorter than it used to be.
Yeah.
So he's been working in the bullpen, just kind of refining his mechanics, or at least getting comfortable with a shorter, it sounds funny to say, but a shorter second toe, and that bunion on his big toe.
The pitchers have a lot of toe problems, of course. Pedro, I remember a few years ago, or maybe it was last year, I had that toe problem. Now, speaking of El Duque, like you said before, do you think he may be better suited for the bullpen on this team, or do you still think he should be a starting pitcher?
Well, there's no intention of putting him in the bullpen. Well, first of all, El Duque kind of declared, "I'm not a bullpen candidate," which is a little bold to declare. But Omar Minaya and Willie Randolph also said he's not a bullpen candidate. Willie expressed concern about getting him up multiple games and that kind of thing. He's going to pitch if he's on the major league staff. He's going to be pitching either every fifth day, or if they could slot him in with an extra day of rest every sixth day, and really, if you look at the bullpen, there's no room. I mean, I could pretty much tell you the 25-man roster right now, including the bullpen, if everyone's healthy. And obviously, Duaner was set back a day today.
Oh.
Duaner Sanchez was supposed to go today for his first Grapefruit League game. He pitched in the inter-squad game, but it would have been his first kind of legit game in 19 months. But he had to be pushed back a day. But because of soreness, but the bullpen really should be Wagner with Sanchez and Howman, kind of the tag team leading up to him. Two left-handers, Feliciano and Schoenweiss. Sosa is the long guy, and Matt Wise, by all accounts, should be the last guy in the bullpen. He's got $750,000 guaranteed, whether he makes the team or not, out of a $1.2 million contract. You don't sign a guy to that if you don't intend to pitch him. And his first grade for the game, he did make that trip to Lakeland, pitched a scoreless inning and looked good. And so I would project that he'd be the last guy in that bullpen.
Now, like you said, El Duque, if he's healthy, you say he'll probably be the fifth starter on this team. So now, do you think it would be a good idea to put Mike Pelfrey in the bullpen if he can't make the rotation?
Well, for the same reason, I know players, teams do put young players in the bullpen, kind of in a holding pattern, but it's not going to happen. One, because I mentioned the bullpen is kind of crowded. You're already optioning Joe Smith in the scenario to AAA and Rudy Lugo also. The other issue is that you need someone stretched out should there be an injury to call up. And really sitting in AAA other than Pelfrey, you'd have like Jason Vargas. So Pelfrey would be the guy getting that first call. If he's sitting in the bullpen,
I agree.
Having pitched only one inning at a time or two innings at a time, or he's not going to be capable, if El Duque were injured, of being stretched out enough to come up or be inserted right in the rotation. He'd have to kind of ramp up. So Mets are probably better served having him sit in AAA than in the bullpen.
Now, yeah, I think definitely Pelfrey should have a spot on this team at some point during the season. Now, getting to some position players, Carlos Beltran, he hasn't played yet in spring training, of course. He had some surgery to clean out both of his knees, I believe, right?
Really, I could cover Carlos Beltran and Luis Castillo because they had the exact same procedure done. They both had both knees cleaned out.
Now,
and
both of them. Do you think that the Met fans should be concerned at all about them, or do you think they'll be fine?
Well, I'd be concerned about it. I mean, certainly the Mets aren't an infallible bunch, and certainly they have a lot of age on their team. I know Beltran's only 30, but I wouldn't feel comfortable with the fact that there's six guys in camp who are not capable of playing Grapefruit League games right now solely based on injuries they're recovering from last year. Both Beltran and Luis Castillo had both knees cleaned out. They're not going to be able to get into Grapefruit League games, at least for a little bit. The problem is actually running, and it's not so much, I don't think, straight-ahead running, but they haven't been able to cut yet, or it bothers them to decelerate. Damian Easley, who had that gruesome ankle injury in D.C. last year, he's in the same boat. He's not been able to cut. Jose Valentin is going to start the year in AAA if he's healthy. Same problem. Coming back from the ACL, tearing his knee, he can't cut. And Andy Chavez, I feel like a broken record. He hurt himself in winter ball. I think it was his right hamstring that he injured, but also his opposite ankle, so it would be his left ankle. It's probably the more serious thing right now. None of them are overly serious, but it's going to keep him out of Grapefruit League games for a while. And then the last guy, if I mentioned six, is Ben Johnson, who had a lot of injuries last year, but he's still limping around with an ankle. So he's going to start the year in AAA, and I don't know if he's going to be full speed right from the beginning.
Mm-hmm. And today, in the 7-0 loss to the Cardinals, John, is actually topsy-turvy what the Mets fan 2007 were used to, as Scott Schoenweiss actually had a 1-2-3 inning, and John Main was a victim of 3 runs on 4 hits in his 2 innings of work. Now, getting to this bullpen with Schoenweiss, this crowded bullpen with a lot of players competing for jobs, obviously you have the guys who are definitely going to make it, but which is a couple of guys that you think could surprise people?
Well, I really don't think there's going to be anyone in the bullpen like Joe Smith last year is going to make it as a surprise. I mean, Stephen Register, the Rule 5 pick, would have to be unbelievable this spring. He did pitch a scoreless inning, I believe, today, and looked good in the intra-squad game also. But, I mean, there's really just no room for him. When they did that selection, the Rule 5 pick, they had yet to sign Matt Wise. They had yet to pick up Lugo at the time. They didn't know who they were going to have to trade in this trade for Santana if they were able to get him. So I really don't see that as a fit. I mean, the guys who were most exciting probably, or the guy who's most exciting is probably Eddie Kuntz, the top pick from last year's draft from Oregon State. But there's no way he's making this team out of spring training like Joe Smith did. One, because of how crowded it is, but two, Joe Smith finished his first full professional season in AA. He jumped from Brooklyn to AA by the end of that first year, which helped a springboard last spring to getting into the bullpen. Kuhn's kind of fizzled out. He didn't have the greatest numbers in Brooklyn last year, so he kind of stalled there, went to the Arizona Fall League, but it's not someone who's going to have an impact right out of the gate this year.
Well, Like you said, you might not be this year, but I've heard from a few sources that Eddie Kunz could possibly be the Mets' next job, Chamberlain. I believe I've heard he's supposed to be a guy with like a big, 6'5" frame, 230 pounds or so. So, do you think this guy has good enough stuff, to be a big factor on this team, and maybe not this year, but maybe next year?
Sure. I mean, I think Job obviously throws Harlan Kunz. I think Kunz is maybe, 95, 96 or so. I haven't seen enough of him yet to get a good feel, but he keeps the ball down in the zone, has a kind of a sinker-slider kind of combination. And I imagine he's going to be the double-A closer to start the year, and we'll see where it goes from there. But he's certainly a guy, trading those three pitchers this year. They're going to move Brent Rusich, the other closer they got from the Pac-10, the draft last year, into the rotation. But guys who excel in the minors are really going to move up quickly because there was a void in the vacancies created by the trade that sent Guerra and Mulvey and Umber to the Twins.
Now, I have a reader asking a question here. This is Sam from New Hyde Park. He asks, what do you think of the war of the words between Jimmy Rollins and Carlos Beltran on how big is this Met-Philly rivalry going to be this year? I mean, it should be great with both teams being so good.
It's going to be a tremendous amount of fun. I think the games are going to be incredibly intense. But I think if anyone's looking for a beanball war or something like that, I don't foresee it unless the pitch accidentally gets away. Like, let's say, I know Pedro Martinez is pretty fine with his control, but let's say Pedro Martinez hits Ryan Howe without malice and Cole Hamels, whoever retaliates. I mean, then I could see getting a little ugly one game, or if there's a hard slide that someone takes offense to. But I think going in, it's just going to be very intense. And I think when people look at the words in the paper or hear it secondhand, they think a lot of these things were said with malice. But Carlos Beltran was really laughing when he said we're the team to beat. He was saying it to motivate his team, just like Jimmy Rollins the year before was saying it to motivate his team, and such as when Rollins called Beltran a plagiarist this year, it wasn't like Hillary Clinton calling Barack Obama a plagiarist. It was meant in a funny fashion. I think I know the Mets players have a lot of respect and really happen to like Jimmy Rollins. I said that to a man last year when Jimmy Rollins first said the team to beat thing. So I really think it's going to be very intense. I'm sure you'll see a lot of fights in the stands, but I'm not sure it's going to be a brawl typing every game with the Mets and the Phillies.
I actually I did see a fight last year between the Mets and a Philly fan. I was a few sections away. Now we have Zach Zweifler here from Lindbergh. He asked a question. He says he wants to know about Johansson Tenney. How many games can he win? And also how much is he going to affect on this team in the postseason?
Well, people made a big deal last year about Santana's stats kind of trailing off at the end, but even if he's mildly down from what he was with his peak with the Twins, the fact that he's going to the National League is going to be a tremendous asset. He's going to chew up these National League lineups, and particularly the NL East lineups like the Marlins and the Nationals. And I've fairly certain he's going to have a 3 ERA or even an under 3 ERA if he has a comparable performance to last year. We saw Maine and Oliver Perez win 15 games apiece with the Mets offense last year. If he gets comparable support, there's no reason why he can't come close to or win 20 games. And speaking about the playoffs, the Mets in the past, when they made the playoffs or come close to making the playoffs, they just didn't have that intimidating rotation. I know Pedro Martinez is a name, but and El Duque was always injured right on the eve of the postseason, but the Mets just didn't have the rotation to match up. Now if they go up against, say, Brandon Webb and Dan Haren, they can match up with Johan Santana and Pedro Martinez and more than hold their own. I can't guarantee they'd win the series, but they'd certainly be right there and matching them up man arm for arm.
No question that now the Mets seem to have that one ace, that one guy that can count on us any time he goes out to the mound. And now getting to another strong part of this Mets team, which has been for quite a while now, has been their bench. And I think they have, of course, Marlon Anderson's up there, Andy Chavez, and Damon Easley. And just talk a little about this Mets bench and what we can expect from it this season, because it just seems that Manaea did the right decision to bring all those guys back.
Yeah, no, I mean, assuming everyone's healthy, it should be pretty strong from a pinch-hitting perspective. Your bench should very well be Ramon Castro being the backup catcher, Marlon Anderson and Damian Easley, two bats off the bench, lefty-righty, the primary pinch hitters off the bench. You have Andy Chavez, who could fill in all three outfield positions, and obviously if Church is having trouble in right field hitting, he could end up out there. And then the last guy to make the team really should be Ruben Gotaya for a number of reasons. He did a pretty good job last year pinch hitting. Number two, he's out of options, meaning he can't be sent to the minors without passing through waivers. And judging by the interest in other teams last year in Ruben Gotaya, I'm sure he'd get claimed and not pass through waivers. And number three, the Mets really need – Jose Reyes can't play every inning of every game. The Mets really need someone they can throw at shortstop, and there's no one else capable of playing shortstop really on the Mets. I know Willie Randolph said Damian Easley's capable, but Willie wasn't comfortable playing Damian Easley at shortstop before the injury.
You don't think Ruben Gotaya can fill in for Reyes at short?
No, what I'm saying is that Ruben Gotaya is going to be the guy, the fifth guy off that bench, because he's the only guy really who could do that. Anderson Hernandez is not making this team. He can't hit enough to be at a major league level for full time, especially part time role where you need to be pinch hitter. So it's going to be Ruben Gotaya, that last player off the bench, and the guy who's going to spell Reyes. So that leaves guys like Angel Pagan, who has an option, could be sent to the minors as an odd man out, and it leaves guys like Almedo Saenz, who could be valuable to the Mets as a righty pinch hitter, probably not on the team because there's no room. Just like Brady Clark as a righty hitting outfielder, if he still got anything left, could probably have been valuable to the Mets, but I don't see any way of him making the team because you have the five bench players pretty much locked in.
Okay, now the Mets have a lot of old guys right now on this team. like you mentioned before, you have Luis Castillo, you have Moises Alou in left field, of course, who's in his 40s. You have Carlos Delgado, who is aging, and he's coming off a disappointing year, but he was injury-prone. There's a lot of, old veterans on this team who are injury-prone. Can the Mets survive if one of these guys or multiple of them goes down or has a disappointing year?
Well, it's certainly a concern. I mean, there's not a lot of safety net. Who's the first baseman if Carlos Delgado gets injured or he falters?
I mean, exactly.
The problem is that there isn't a guy on the major league roster. The guys who would be playing first base, the Mets would probably have to go out and make a trade because the guys who would be playing first base, Marlon Anderson and Damian Easley would be your primary guys playing first base if Delgado had to sit a game or was out for a while. There's no one in the minors right now. I mean, Michelle Abreu is here. He's going to be the AAA first baseman. But, he didn't even play last year because of a visa problem. And the year before, he was in AA. And the bottom line is that he's actually really 32 years old. It's documented he's 4 years older than he's listed as, and he's only been a career minor leaguer. And then Mike Karp, the first base prospect, wasn't even invited to big league camp, which kind of shows you his standing there. So, if you're talking about first base, there's definitely a problem there if Delgado underperforms. Now, as far as the outfield, Andy Chavez certainly could fill in if Moises Alou weren't capable of playing, and Moises has not had 400 at-bats. He hasn't reached 400 at-bats either of the last 2 years, so certainly there's going to be times when he can't play, and it's going to have to be, I guess, Andy Chavez. You look in the minors now, minus Gomez and minus Millage, unless you wanted to call up Fernando Martinez, you really don't see anyone there who could play long term. They can have Angel Pagan sitting in AAA as a switching outfielder, but I'm not sure he's the answer long term for a team that wants to go deep into the playoffs.
Now, you speak of the Mets going deep into the playoffs. Once again, Adam Rubin, Mets reporter for the Daily News, joining us now. And the guy that's going to get them there is going to be, of course, manager Willie Randolph, who has seemed to come in with a mindset and he said in the camp, I believe he said, no more time for pep talks, just need to play it on the field. And Frankie, one of our listeners asked on the chat here, he wants to know, is Willie Randolph going to baby Reyes through the season in terms of playing him, on a regular basis, or is it going to be a different story than last year when Reyes just seemed to play every single day?
Well, Willie said last year that he wanted to rest Reyes more. He said again this spring that he wants to rest Reyes more this year. But he said that a lot of players said he didn't want to play David Wright every day. But when push comes to shove, it seems like the pattern is that they play a little bit too much. I think Willie will try to be a little bit more conscious of it. But he said Reyes is such a, at least a hard-nosed player in this respect, that, Ray, if Willie calls Reyes into his office and says, you're sitting today, Reyes just storms out of the office, like he won't even listen to him. So, I mean, certainly Reyes wants to play every day, and it's going to be Willie's job to slow that down. That's why a guy like Gotay is important, because Gotay has to prove he can handle shortstop starting 10 or 12 games a year to give Jose that rest.
And also Reyes has got the big contract, so maybe that little bit of a factor that he feels that wants to fulfill that contract and play every day.
I think actually the Mets got they got a bargain with Reyes's contract compared to what a lot of the other guys are getting.
Yeah, I think it was if I remember correctly, it was 4 years, $22.25 million, which was a pretty good deal for the Mets. Although when people compare it to Wright's deal, which was 6 years and $55 million, it's a little bit misleading, because Wright gave away an extra year of free agency. Wright gave away 2 years of free agency. Reyes gave away 1 year of free agency. So you can't just add 1 year to the average of Reyes' contract to try to equate it with Wright's. You have to add 1 year at the higher level, because Reyes gave away one fewer years.
I really think with the market right now, the Mets really got bargains, home town discounts with both of those guys. Now, the Mets' two acquisitions in the last ex-millage trade, of course, were outfielder Ryan Church from the Washington Nationals and catcher Brian Schneider. Now, when the Mets first made this trade, I didn't really like it that much. I thought that Millage had a lot of talent, and I thought that he could have been a good factor on the team this year, especially now that it looks like they're short on right-handed hitters. But with Ryan Church, he's a decent defensive outfielder that has some good pop, and Schneider, one of the best defensive catchers in baseball. So what do you think of this deal? And also about Millage's comments the other day.
Well, I think when you look at the whole sequence of events, you have to go back to even a year before that with the Rule 5 draft when the Mets lost Jesus Flores, because had the Mets had Jesus Flores, this whole sequence of events may never have started where they needed the catcher, because maybe Jesus would have emerged now as a guy who could step in for the Mets. Excuse me. But that said, and I know LeDuc is signed as a free agent with the Nationals, I think Mets fans at least would much rather have Jesus Flores, Paul LeDuc, and Lasting's Millage than Brian Schneider and Ryan Church. But Omar keeps saying that there's such a value to having a defensive catcher, and even though Schneider's only going to hit, or he only hit 230 and change last year, he is a defensive upgrade. He threw out at least 10 or 15% more runners than LeDuc, and you already saw LeDuc had knee surgery this year and is going to be out for, I haven't read recently, but it sounded like he was going to be out till at least mid-March with that knee injury that he had surgery for, arthroscopic surgery. So from that perspective, it's a defensive upgrade. We'll see if Church can actually be the everyday right fielder. He hasn't shown in his career, at least the major league career, he could hit lefty pitching. It's going to be something everyone's going to be watching this spring. If not, Damian Easley and Andrew Chavez are going to get more and more at-bats in right field as the year goes on. That's for Millage's comments. The Mets went out of their way, the front office and Willie, to defend Millage when it really was indefensible, his behavior at points. They bent over backwards saying nice things about him, knowing that it was their job to protect him. And for Millage to pop off about the Mets now, and I know Billy Wagner hung the sign from his locker that said, know your place, rook, and all that. But, I mean, they haze rookies a lot worse than that, or treat rookies a lot worse than that. Joe Smith is still carrying, I think, candy to the bullpen every day. He's the youngest player in the bullpen. So Millage is certainly out of line. He's a very – one of the things – about him that makes him good probably is that he has a lot of confidence, but it also comes off in an ugly way a lot of times.
Yeah, I mean, Miller just basically said to the Mets, screw you. And, he said that, he made comments about New York that he didn't like his stay here and stuff like that. So I think it was pretty much uncalled for. I think he should just move on. He's with a different team now and should just forget what happened in New York and move on with his career.
Well, one of the things I'm looking forward to is that it seems like every team in the National East, for the most part, there's really a storyline. There's going to be, obviously, the Mets and the Phillies one is obvious, but you have Millage and LeDuc and even Manny Acta with the Nationals. Heck, you even have Johnny Estrada, short-lived Met with the Nationals. So, I'm sorry
to interrupt you. Even the Florida Marlins could be somewhat dangerous. I mean, they always seem to beat the Mets when you least expect it. And, for the Marlins' point of view, I didn't like them, that trade that they made with Wilson Cabrera, even though they got some great young prospects in that deal. I mean, Wilson Cabrera basically in the prime of their career, and they gave up two All-Stars to the Tigers. Now, the Tigers are probably the best team in the American League.
Yeah, I actually asked Cabrera a few days ago or yesterday when we were in Lakeland if he thought the trade would have happened, if that stadium is going to happen, what the Marlins now had been committed to 6 months earlier. He said he didn't know, but you have to believe they may have attempted to hold on to him had they knew they had the stadium in place. But the payroll is very low right now. You know, the guys that got Andrew Miller, I think he pitched against the Mets last year in Detroit, looked very good. And Cameron Maven is going to be a very talented center fielder. But you saw every time the Marlins do a great job of reloading every time they pull this kind of thing. But there is a year or two period where they take a step back. I actually saw Mike Jacobs today, which was kind of fun. The Marlins and the Cardinals share a complex, and Mike seemed to still be happy that the Marlins knocked out the Mets last year. And he's certainly excited about the rivalry coming to Shea and trying to beat the Mets, just like Millage is going to be in, and Glavine when he faces the Mets too. So there's going to be storylines every time he's in facing the NL East team.
No question about that. And Adam, we just have just a one more question before you go. I'm just wondering. So will there be a Carlos, Omar, Pedro, and a Johan?
I think I'm not getting royalty checks anymore, so you don't have to promote it. I think I'm done with that title. But we'll see. Maybe we'll get a book in the works if something happens this year.
Yeah. Well, once again, thank you for the time. But just one last question. Zach from Lundbrook asks. This is a baseball general question. He says, with all of the HGH allegations, do you think players should be tested more often, and should there be a better testing system?
Well, I mean, I think it's clear, and it was in the Mitchell report, that once steroid testing went into place, it wasn't like players stopped using performance-enhancing drugs. They just switched a lot of them to HGH, which isn't detectable. I think at some point you're going to have either a blood or urine test for HGH, and then players will start getting tested for that once the collective bargaining agreement is revised to allow that. But then, you know, technology is always ahead of, or science is always seems to be ahead of the people policing things. So I'm sure something else will be come up with it at some point to kind of put the athletes who want to cheat a little step ahead again. But not to go on a tangent, but it's certainly going to be fascinating 5 years from now, because that Hall of Fame class in 5 years is going to be, at least the voting class, is going to be Roger Clemens and Barry Bonds on the same ballot with Sammy Sosa and other guys like Mike Piazza too. So certainly going to be a fascinating class in 5 years.
Okay, Adam Rubin, thanks so much once again for coming on, and we hope to see you down the line.
Sounds good to hear.
Great. And, of course, is Adam Rubin.
Yeah, I mean, he gave a good half hour there of great insight, and so did the Yankee guy from SNY.TV, of course. I mean, we want to thank both of them for coming on to our show, of course.
Okay, so and, we...
All right, so now we're going to take a quick break. We got some Rangers hockey coming up. The Rangers currently right now are up 3-1 in Carolina, but Carolina's on a long power play. The Rangers committed double minor. We'll be right back on Ace Man of the Quas to talk some Rangers hockey and to take some of your phone calls at 1-646-478-5118.
It's a network of shows from a group of average Joes.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for tuning in to Sports Heaven with Mark and Evan Live.
Welcome, everybody, to the Coach Rope Show.
And what's up, everybody? 7:02, Sunday night, Matt and Joe Radio, back again live, and welcome to the Sports Talk again on Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, and welcome. Frank, sports guy. Welcome to Sports Talk Live.
And welcome to the Seven Train Shane Mets radio show on Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, what's going on, people? My name is Kendrick Thomas.
And welcome to System Showdown here on Blog Talk Radio.
You can't call him that after the Super Bowl loss. Of course,
Mark,
you still have the Dynasty and Tom Brady and Bill Belichick.
Who was more successful this season, the Patriots or the Giants?
Here's the question I posed. Game one of the playoffs, who would you rather have on the mound, Johan Santana or Qingming Wang?
We are back here. We had to cut that short a bit because we are having our Rangers roundtable coming up right now, 9:00 on a Thursday night, and we'll be having, once again, as we said before,
Once again, I hope everybody's enjoying the show. A lot of guests tonight, jam-packed show.
We'll be taking
phone calls right after the Rangers Roundtable, of course, 1-646-478-5118. That is the number to call, of course.
Okay,
right,
we have a 212 call on the line.
Well, let's.
This is Doobie of Blue Shirt Bulletin. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
This is Doobie.
Hey.
This is Doobie.
All right, great. We're just going to join us right now as well is Doug Fisher of Blue Shirts on Broadway. Are you on with us as well?
Hey,
hello,
guys. How are you doing?
All right, great. So we have Doug Fisher. I guess first we'll go over to Doobie. Tell us a little bit about your blog, Blue Shirt Bulletin, and what goes on over there.
BlueShirtBulletin.com is a blog that's updated daily with Ranger news and with links to everything all over the Ranger world. And it's also the online presence of a print publication, Blue Shirt Bulletin, which is available by subscription.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Yep.
And we also Doug Fisher making his second appearance on the show. So, Doug, just remind our listeners about your blog over at MVN.
It's over on MVN.com, and I try to update it a few times a week. Usually whenever the Rangers play, I put up a little something about the trade deadline, get it moving as much as possible, keep it up to date.
All right. Well, now the Rangers are, right now, they're up 3-1 in Carolina currently. Playing much better of late, 5-0-2 in their last seven games. So, guys, what do you think of the Rangers' recent play right now? And they got some momentum going into the postseason.
We'll start with Doug here.
We've been playing really well recently. Everybody's clicking, and until Eric Cole scored his goal in the second that made it 3-1 Rangers, we had scored, it was 10 straight goals before allowing one. The lines are clicking, the defense is playing really solid, and hopefully they can keep it up.
And, Judy, what are your thoughts on tonight's game?
Well, the key Rangers over the past three seasons, I'm sure it comes as no surprise to say that's Jaromir Jagr and Henrik Lundqvist. Both of them have had up-and-down seasons, mostly down for Jagr in the scoring department. Henrik has been inconsistent, and what we've seen over the past, I'd say, 15 games is that both of these guys are picking their game up, becoming more the player that we're used to seeing. Jaromir's still not scoring goals the way he used to, but with his new line mates, the three of them are dominating games. And other than the third period in Montreal, Henrik seems to be back to his old self too.
Well, Carolina has actually just scored. It's now 3-2 in the Ranger game. Of course, looks like here it is Eric Cole. Kind of like a lucky goal here, kind of like a chipped off Fedotin's stick and then kind of hopped in. So now it's 3-2, Rangers still have the lead, third period in Carolina. Now, how impressed have you guys been with the play of the Dubinsky-Avery-Jagr line? I mean, Dubinsky has matured right in front of our eyes. I guess we can start with Doug?
You just said it. Dubinsky's really coming into his own the last few games. He's got, he scored in the first period. It was his ninth goal in the last 19 games.
That was gorgeous.
He's really a budding star. He's him and Dawes are actually, they're both over 10 goals now. First time a pair of Ranger rookies have done that since 99 when it was Mike York and Jan Halavich. I mean, hopefully they turn out a little better than York and Halavich did, but he's definitely on the right track.
And how about Doobie?
Well, Blue Shirt Bulletin, I can't tell you how excited we are at Brandon Dubinsky's success.
The guy is great. Great
he was, during the lockout, when we were looking for things to write about in the monthly magazine, one of the things we obviously turned to was to see how people in the Ranger organization were doing wherever they were playing during the lockout. Brandon was the first guy we interviewed in our current format where we monthly we run one or two interviews of prospects. He was the first guy we ever interviewed. And immediately learned that he grew up as a Ranger fan with his father having come from the New York area. And I tell you, the kids in New York now, he is having a ball. He's having the time of his life.
Mm-hmm.
And it shows on the ice. I mean, he's just become – he came to New York this season at training camp determined to make the team and determined to make an impact. And he sure has.
And now, of course, Doobie, you get about at least 100 comments, you know, per article over at Blue Shirt Bulletin. I would imagine there would be a lot of reception on their trade that brought Blackman to to the Rangers with the St. Louis Blues. What were the Rangers fans' overall thoughts from at least reading from your blog and what you heard? What were their overall thoughts on that trade?
I think that the overall impression is that people wanted the Rangers to do something more dramatic, at least on the fan side. They wanted either a puck-moving defenseman to quarterback the power play, or they wanted a crease-clearing defenseman to make the team more physical. It didn't happen. Glenn Sather explained why he didn't want to mess with the team's chemistry, that he just wanted to improve the team's depth. We knew it was coming because that's what they said before the trade deadline. So I think rather than the reception to the individual players has been a little bit mixed, but I don't think that the overall reaction is about the individual players. It's more about the impact of the moves overall.
And Doug, what were the Rangers fans' thoughts over at NBN about the trade that yielded Blackman?
Yeah, I mean, Bagman, I agree. I think we could have, a lot of fans were looking for them to make a bigger splash, a guy like Hossa. There was a lot of talk about a defenseman like Adam Foote or Rob Blake. But Bagman, you know, he's big. He's 6'4". It's the same as Foote, and I think he's even got 2 inches on Blake. And he's going to be a solid defenseman. And the other thing is he's played with Lundqvist in the past, both on the Swedish Olympic team and in Frölunda, so there's already a little bit of chemistry there. So hopefully it turns out for the better. He's on contract for next year, so.
Okay. Well, I actually have a question from Zach here in Lynbrook. He asked, do you think the NHL will ever return to, like, the popularity that it had before the lockout? Because, obviously, you know, the NHL, you know, it's a great sport to us, but for the average person around America, I think that there's really not enough hockey, especially after this transition to Versus. So what do you guys think about the NHL, you know, growing back to the popularity that it once had? I guess we can start with Doobie.
Well, if you're watching tonight's Ranger game, you're noticing some very curious decisions by the officials. And I think
Shanahan, sorry to interrupt you, Shanahan just scored. It's now 4-2 Rangers, beautiful shot, top shelf. So perfect timing here. So now I'm sorry. Back to what you're saying.
I was saying that if you're watching the game tonight, you're seeing some curious decisions by the officiating crew in terms of how they're calling penalties. They're calling ticky-tacky stuff, but they're not calling some really dangerous hits. Mm-hmm. And I think that kind of stuff gets hardcore fans like me and others. It gets us mad, but we still keep watching the game. But I think that kind of thing totally turns off any casual fan who may be watching a game, certainly any casual fan in America will be accustomed to the way they call games in the NFL, where it's relatively consistent. Of course, they make mistakes too, but they're used to a certain level of officiating, and they've got to watch these games and think, what the heck's going on here? And I think until the NHL gets their act together on the ice and off the ice and makes themselves into a major league, then I don't think they will be a major league.
Mm-hmm. And, Doug, what are your thoughts about the NHL getting more popularity?
You know, it's going to be difficult. There's only so much that Sidney Crosby and Alex Ovechkin can do for the game. But you touched on it earlier when you mentioned Versus. There's really no national coverage of hockey. A lot of markets don't even have Versus. So a lot of people are missing the marquee games that they choose to show there. A lot of people miss the All-Star game, and they're really missing a lot of the talent. You know, SportsCenter only gives hockey highlights. It's 2 minutes a night, and it's really a shame because a lot of people are missing out on, I think it's been a great competitive league this year.
Definitely no question about that. And of course, it was about time that, you know, Chris Drury started clicking for this team. Now he's got, 9 goals in the last 11 games. He's been absolutely on fire. He's starting to take a more leadership role. He was booed by his, of course, you expect that he'd be booed by his former team in Buffalo. But what are your thoughts about Chris Drury finally coming out of his shell here and, you know, getting back up to the 20 goals that he's had the last couple of years? I guess we'll start with Doug here.
I mean, well, it's about time, you know. We brought him in, we gave him the big contract, and he's finally starting to earn it. The first half of the season was probably all a blur from him. But I think it helped, you know, Gomez started to get going, and then I think it helped Drury to actually get off the line with Jágr. They put him down on the third line for a while, and I think just got something in his head, like, I need to step it up, and he really has. He's been a true leader recently, as you said, with the goals.
and he's going to be very valuable over his contract. He's not going to be a bust, and nobody should worry about that.
And Doobie, is Chris Drury becoming a fan favorite over at Blue Shirt Bulletin?
I think people liked him from the beginning, and I think people gave him a lot of leeway when he was struggling early in the season. So we didn't see that much, fan reaction to the way he was playing. I think it actually started to snowball just before he broke out of a slump. In fact, I'm going to take credit for it. He got my memo. The day they went into Philly, I posted an article that day, and I said, Chris Drury's got to get it going. And that night, he started the streak that he's on now. And he scored in those all three of those games and won player of the week, or third star of the week that week, and then he's continued on since then. I'll tell you one thing I noticed.
Okay.
That maybe wasn't that obvious was I thought until recently I thought he was struggling with the puck. Passes would jump off his stick. He couldn't stick handle well. I thought his play away from the puck was great. Everybody recognized that. But I think his problem in the first half of the season was he just wasn't controlling that puck. And if you watch him now, he's got the puck on a string. And I think that's been the difference for him.
Yeah, definitely. I think that comes with confidence as well. Of course, with Chris Drury, we saw what he could do to us last year in the postseason. As, basically killed us in Game 5. Besides the Rangers, I mean, there are a lot of other quality teams right now in the Eastern Conference. You know, the Devils in first place. Ottawa, even though in second place, just fired the head coach. Pittsburgh, of course, and, Carolina, who we're playing tonight. Who do you think is right now the best team in the Eastern Conference, and who do you think is the most dangerous when it comes to playoff time? So, Doobie?
I'm going to maybe surprise people and say I think that the Rangers are the best team in the Eastern Conference right now. They are building momentum at the right time. They've got a lot of weapons that have been underperforming all season and are starting to perform. And again, to go back to where I started, if Jágr and Henrik get back to the top of their game, they're going to be hard to stop. I think New Jersey is a mirage. I think Ottawa is not going to go anywhere with their goaltending. I think even with Hossa, I think Pittsburgh is not going to – I don't think he's going to get them over at the top. He traditionally disappears in the playoffs, and their goaltending is not going to hold up. And I don't know where to go from there, but I think the Rangers have a golden opportunity to get out of the East.
Okay, yeah, definitely. How about you, Doug?
Yeah, I was going to just say that right now I think that Montreal is the best team in the East. We saw the game last week when they stormed back and beat us, and that just proved that they're a relentless team. They have great offensive ability, and they will never quit on a game. That said, I do think that the Rangers are currently the most dangerous team, especially come playoff time, because we have all the veteran leaders, and we have guys that are known winners in the playoffs like Drury and Shanahan to lead the way.
No question of that. And, of course, what do you think about Avery getting healthy? I guess we'll start with Doug here.
Well, that's definitely the most important thing because, they show it every game that he misses. They show it on MSG, the stats of our record when he's in and our record when he's out.
I mean, it's unbelievable, the difference. I mean, this guy's wrist gets healthy, he gets going with Dubinsky, and his team starts, they keep winning games.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely been the spark that we needed. Last year, he proved that, you don't have to go for the big star at the deadline. You have to get somebody with the grit that'll help the team out. And he's been the guy, I think, that sparked Jágr, because if he can't, nobody can. He's providing the energy for that line. The most important thing about Avery, though, is he's a potential free agent, and we cannot let him get away.
No question about that. And going over to Dubec, I can just imagine what the comments must be like begging for Avery to be healthy.
Avery is obviously a very popular player right now. I'll tell you what I've seen happening with him is even after he came back, and although he did have some wrist problems, I don't think the wrist problems are any better, regardless of what Joe Micheletti might have said tonight on TV. I thought he came back and was not his old self, and I think it goes back to when Colin Campbell called him on the carpet for all the stuff that happened up there in Toronto. And I think he was shying away from the agitating game. Now, a lot of people say, hey, this guy's a skilled player. Why doesn't he just, play to his skill and forget about that agitating stuff? Every time I've ever talked to him about that, he always says, that gets me going. when I get the – it doesn't just get under the other team's skin. It also – he gets himself motivated by doing that. And I think he kind of lost that his first few games back. And I think he doesn't – he's not playing that way now, but I think being on the line with Dubinsky and Jágr has really focused him on his skill game, and he's playing really well.
And now getting to the NHL playoff race, of course, all those factors, Avery being healthy is – big one in terms of that. The Rangers, they've got to be happy with themselves right now. You know, they're sitting in, at the seventh spot and that with Boston and Buffalo kind of sandwiched in between them. Now, me being a Devils fan, I do see that definitely the Rangers can make the playoffs, but what do you think about the Rangers moving up in the standing? You know, I mean, they're not much behind Montreal. Pittsburgh just added Hossa, so, I mean, that could definitely be a factor. But what do you think about the Rangers – can it get more than just seventh place? I guess we'll start with Doobie here.
Definitely.
Well, with New Jersey and Pittsburgh in the division, it puts a ceiling on how far up you can go, because if you don't get first place in the division, then the next place is fourth. Now, I think they could definitely get that high. I don't think it makes a difference, really, whether they end up finishing fourth, fifth, or sixth. Or, you know, I think seventh might be the best position. I mean, sorry. Six might be the best position to end up with because
Carolina.
The team, yeah, Carolina. Although Carolina's given the Rangers a bit of trouble.
I mean, but you know that's what the Rangers got last year. They got with Atlanta. They got, I think, kind of lucky.
Yeah.
Plus, you know, Pittsburgh, Ottawa. That was a 4-5 matchup, I believe, last year. And you know, both those teams had over 100 points, while the Rangers got Atlanta. They only had like something like 93 points.
Yeah.
And you know, they killed Atlanta first round. So.
But it's tight, and the last 10 games of the season, I think, or 10 out of the last 11 or something, are in the division.
Yeah, the race,
so.
It's a great race this year. Everybody
yeah.
in the playoffs is within 8 points. It's really unbelievable. Ethan, oh, wait, did we ask both of you? I'm sorry. I'm not sure. I'm sorry.
Did we ask Doug?
Yeah, I mean, it's all going to come down to the last 10 games. As you said, they're all against division teams. I think we're definitely capable of moving up. Just look at the month of February. We only have two losses. We lost to the Kings and the Ducks, and then we've got a couple overtime losses, but we still get the points from that. But the division, it's really going to come down to us, the Devils, and Pittsburgh. Even though Pittsburgh picked up Hossa, I don't think they have the goaltending to really make an impact. Sure, their power play is going to be incredible, and they're going to score more. But just,
well, Ty Conklin has really been a great. He's been a huge surprise for them. But I think eventually he's got to come back to earth.
Yeah, he's going to come back, and then I don't know about when Fleury is coming back, but I'm assuming it's going to be pretty soon. But when it comes down to the tough grind at the end of the season, I think that I would favor certainly Brodeur and Lundqvist over either of them.
Okay, great guys. Once again, join us. Doug Fish of MVN, Blue Shirts on Broadway, and from Blue Shirt Bulletin, of course, Doobie. Guys, want to thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to join us, and we hope to see you down the line, and let's go Rangers.
Thank you.
All right,
thank you guys.
Thank you guys so much.
All right, well, we're going to take a quick break. I just want to update the local scores, though. Right now, the Islanders are leading Atlanta 4-3, and of course, we just had the Rangers guys on. The Rangers are up 4-2. Both of those games are late in the third period, so both teams with a good chance to gain a few points in the standings tonight. And thank you for Doobie and Doug, who both came on.
Great job, guys. Check out their blogs. We have it posted up in my EDN Media. That's our official sponsor. Check out all their blogs, all their inside great stuff, of course. But we'll take a quick break.
Well, just one more thing. NBA, Nets right now up 87-78 third quarter over the Milwaukee Bucks.
The Nets
without Jason Kidd not doing so terrible.
No.
But over the long haul, I think it's going to hurt them at least this year. But I think they had to make the trade.
Yeah, I guess. Time to talk about basketball tonight.
Wait, let's give the Knicks their 32 seconds.
Okay, as usual.
Well, they had a big win last night.
Yeah, they did win. They actually won a game. They actually played some basketball, played some defense, beat the Bobcats, beat Michael Jordan's Bobcats, 113-89. They had Robinson had 22, Jamal Crawford, taking us his hot streak, he had 20 points.
That's
and that's it.
That's
We're
it.
Done. The Knicks, I'm done. I'm finished.
That's
finito,
it. That's
finito.
All right, we're gonna take a quick commercial break. We'll be right back on Ace Man and the Cross.
The sports docket is not all sports. Neither is it all serious. We do get some laughs.
Keep sports a little bit here. We'll switch to the NBA a little bit. So the season just getting underway now. So do you think we'll start with Emil this time? Think it's true or false? Will the San Antonio Spurs repeat as NBA champions?
You know, I'm tempted to say false because every year you can make a case why they shouldn't, but every year they seem to be the best team. But I'm going to say probably. I'm going to say yes. They're true. They're going to repeat.
My opinion is, my prediction is, I think they're going to have a down year, and all of a sudden they're going to bring Evil Longoria into the dressing room after every game. They're going to peak at the right time and win it again.
Tony
Parker. I think we would all peak if she walked into our locker room, you know, guys.
Tony Parker is a lucky man.
I agree with that. They're my favorite team just because of that.
When you watch those games in the NBA Finals, they show more shots of Eva Longoria
yeah, exactly.
than they do of actually the players.
Send something to that cameraman, am I right?
The smart man, he knows what the viewers
That's
want
right.
to watch.
Exactly.
And welcome back to the Sports Docket here on Blog Talk Radio with Ace Man and the Quaff. 9:21. We got 9 minutes left in the program. We got a special caller, another guest on our program joining us.
Zach.
It's Zach. He's our publicist. But he goes by in our program, Zach from Lynbrook. So, Zach, thanks for coming on.
How's it going, guys?
Doing good. Oh, let me just shut that off.
Live from
Okay, hello, Zach. What's going on?
Not much. How are you guys doing?
Good.
Zach, what's up, man? How's your night going?
Right. It couldn't be better. I get to listen to the best program on Blog Talk. Nay, on the
That's
radio.
Right.
It don't get better than with the night.
Oh, man.
With
it's great.
Ace and the Quas Man. It don't get better than that.
It doesn't get better. You're
better
totally
than
right,
that.
Zach. It does
and Zach, just
better.
Because of you coming on, we just want to have a couple people in our chat room, so.
You know, you can't. You got to give the people what they want. Talking to me, I mean, you can't get better than that. You guys?
I mean, yeah, it does not get better than Zach. I mean, Zach.
Zach
is
and
why
and
everybody
listens. Zach, and you guys got to hear the Ace Man and the Quas, and now you get Zach for a few minutes.
Ace Man.
The Ace Man, the Quas, and the Zach Attack.
Zach Attack.
Well, Zach and Ack Attack. How about that?
That's something. That, something to that cameraman.
All right, so, Zach, you got anything for us? Are we getting those press passes soon?
Well, I am working on it. We got the NFL, you know, on our side, as always.
The NFL's always on our side.
You know, and I have just a quick little tidbit for you guys now that I'm talking about the NFL. You know, I found out today that, you know, the officials from the NFL on the off season they go work on the NFL, which I thought was kind of weird. I would think that they'd be, you know, a little bit of rivals, but apparently they share staff.
Wow,
it's a crazy world.
Yeah, Zach, how about your Minnesota Twins? You know, they're what's your prediction? How many wins do you think they'll get? Do you think Carlos Gomez is going to hit 20 home runs, and we're going to see Philip Hubbard win 15 games? What do you think about the Twins?
I think they got a lot of potential. I mean, they got some new names. They've been looking for some new names, and they've already got some new names in the bullpen. They got some great promises coming up from minor leagues. And especially now, there's a lot of hype over this new ballpark's coming in. I mean, think about all the Mets here, the Mets fans here at Shea. I mean, we're looking at our own field for the first time in a very long time.
And the Yankees as well. The Yankees.
Well, right, but I think that with the Yankees, we're leaving I'm sorry, guys.
Metrodome.
Thank you. I'm losing my mind. The Metrodome, and we're going to our own place where it's going to be beautiful. It's going to attract all those beautiful football fans, you know, with the outdoor weather, you know, getting to like negative 40 today down in Minnesota. Could you imagine postseason, home, Minnesota, outdoors? That would be nuts. Everybody would freeze in their
That
assholes.
Would be pretty sick.
That would. I don't think it can get better than that. I don't think it can get outdoors, Minnesota, for baseball fans. I think some of them.
That would be pretty cool.
That it can't get better. Some of these little baby fans are going to be really really upset, but it'll bring out the real rock hard fans the World Series postseason.
I mean, yeah, you're going to definitely have to be a true fan to sit through that. I mean, it might be below freezing temperatures, but, you know, they're going to have to suck it up and play. Zach, thanks for calling in, and I'll see you in school tomorrow, man.
Thanks for having me.
Great. That, of course, is Zach. We have another call on the line right now. Another 516 Eric Tone.
Represent.
Hello. I was in Liberty last week. Hello?
Yo.
Yo, what's up?
Hey, Scott. What's going on?
Nothing. Before I get started, I'm just going to say, if you ever put the Zach Attack back on the show, I'm not listening.
Oh, come on.
All right.
I took
a tour of Yankee Stadium today.
Oh, the good one.
It was pretty good. I'm glad I went. We got to go into the actual clubhouse. We got to actually sit in the dugout, walk onto the field.
Pretty cool stuff. I actually went in it last summer. I think even though I was a Mets fan, it's pretty cool stuff.
It's a
beautiful stadium, you know. It's a very nice place to be.
They keep it well kept. They were repainting the whole thing. Like, they were completely renovating it, which is interesting because they're taking it down after the season, yet they were repainting everything, all the luxury boxes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Shea Stadium has got a paint job since maybe the 80s.
That's why we're getting Citi Field, though. I mean, the Yankees, I think they do keep it staying nice. You got anything about the Islanders tonight?
They have a one-goal lead, I think. Like three.
Yeah, they do. 2.5 minutes up against Atlanta, one-goal lead. Zach, thanks for calling in.
I was going to get back to my about the tour.
Okay.
Okay, we just want to get to other callers here, but yeah, go ahead.
They were very strict about when and where you could take pictures and video.
I mean, yeah, I think.
I think they're trying to hide something. I don't know.
Are they trying to hide syringes, maybe?
Yeah. I checked under the bench in the dugout.
What was there? Was there anything? Well, not yet because it's not the season. I mean, if you go in there in May, I think you'll find something. All right. Well, Zach, thanks for the call, man.
It's Scott.
I'm Scott. Yeah.
We're going to WWE Raw. We're going to Raw on April 28th. That should be really fun. Thanks for the call, man.
Thanks for the call, Zach. Okay. See you guys later. Stop. All right, now we got another 516 caller. Thanks so much for coming on. Where are you calling from? You're on the Sports Talk. Hello.
Quick, we got a few minutes left.
Yo, we got very little time. It's Frankie the Sports Guy. What's up, guys?
Hey,
how you doing?
Hey, Frankie, what's going on?
Not much. I just called to tell you guys, great show. Adam Rubin was outstanding.
Thank you, man.
Even though I'm not really a Ranger fan, I'm an Islander fan. He was really good, too.
Well, they're winning tonight. They're winning.
Yeah, they're winning. They're going to make the playoffs. Yeah, right.
I think they could possibly pass Buffalo. I mean, Buffalo is not as good as they were last year. They lost a lot of players.
No, the problem with the Islanders, they can't play consistently, and that's the main thing. They can win five games, six games, and then lose two or three games, and that's not going to help them because then they're going to have to depend on the other teams to lose with them, and that's not how you have to play. You got to win.
Frankie, I'm sorry to laugh on the air. But Atlanta's just tied the game.
Okay, so the Islanders will not win this game tonight, like I said. And that's a problem. And well, whatever. But, I mean, I think they've had on and off years, so I can't wait till hockey ends.
I thank you, but we're gonna...
How about Bobby Holik, Ethan? The ex-devil.
Yeah, well.
I know.
That's nice. Well, I know you guys have to go. I just want to say
Frankie, remind the listeners, give them the link to your show. Frankie's got a show, too, here on Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, on Blog Talk Radio, you can hear me from blogtalkradio.com/ Sports Talk Live with Frankie, or just go to my website, frankiethesportsguy.com. Keep it real, guys. You're doing a great job. Thanks.
No problem. And that's, what night is that? That's Tuesday night?
Tuesday night's at 10 o'clock, and you can also hear the archives at any time. And actually, this week, coming up real quick, Mike Silva from Gotham Sports Radio is going to be on, and then there'll be a guy from the New England Collegiate Men's Baseball League, a wood bat baseball league. It's really weird. It's like the Cape Cod League that Mark had on last night on his show, Sports Talk New York. And also some, I've just heard of him for the first time, some martial arts actor. He's a mixed martial arts actor. He's got a movie coming out on the 14th. Can't at the moment remember the movie, but if you go to my website, You can find out all the information on that. It sounded like a cool interview, so I took
care
of that.
Okay, great, Frankie. Well, thanks so much for coming on, and we'll be sure to tune into your show.
All right, take it easy, guys. Have a good night.
You too.
All right.
All right. All right. Well, now we unfortunately have run out of time for the night.
Yeah, we want to thank Adam Rubin, Tom Borstein, and everybody else who tuned in, and all of our guests, and of course the Ranger bloggers, Doobie and Doug Fisher. And Stephen, got a little something to end with.
Yeah, I got a little something to end with. Once again, thanks everybody listening, everybody called. Just reminder, finally, a reminder, Islanders and Threshers are going to overtime, and the Rangers are up 4-2 in the third period.
Okay.
All right, so we're going to end, I guess, with a little rock. See you later.
A little rock.